Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Right Lane, a podcast of the Tampa Bay Times. Each week, Times reporter Elaine DeGregory discusses her stories and answers your questions. The focus is on craft. My name is Maria Carrillo, and I'm the enterprise editor at the Times. Today's topic, politics in a pandemic. Joining us today is Steve Contorno, the political editor at the Times. Steve joined the Times in 2013, starting at PolitiFact in the company's DC bureau. He moved to Tampa to cover county government in 2015, and joined the politics team during the 2018 midterm elections. He's also covered politics in Virginia, Wisconsin, and Illinois. He's a graduate of the University of Illinois and a Chicago native, so we get a lot of Slack messages about Chicago sports teams. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
So we were just reminiscing about this recently. Back in February, you all remember February. Steve and Mike Van Sickler, our state and government editor, held a brainstorm for the 2020 election. It was really good. Everyone was so excited and eager to help out. And then, well, 2020 happened. So how hard has it been to get your focus exclusively back on this election?
Really hard. We entered the year expecting 2020 to consume us and the election to be, you know, not only the biggest story of the year, but perhaps the biggest story of our lives. And then this pandemic came and it not only seized my attention, but it completely derailed the campaign. For a long time, it made it difficult to write the kind of election stories that we hope to tell. It was all hands on deck, obviously, to helping cover the pandemic in the newsroom. And I teamed up with a lot of other departments, you know, to try to make sense of this quickly evolving story that had so many elements to it. You had, there was a government response, there was a health response. It was just like so many things to wrap your arms around that we had never really tackled before. So as we've gotten closer and closer to November, though, we've had to sort of return to those stories, find a way to return to those stories. But in a very different lens, because the pandemic not only changed our culture and our lives, it changed politics too. So trying to return to those stories through a new lens, not being able to necessarily go out and talk to people, because that was so much of what we had in that conversation in February was, let's get out and cover our backyard, our state, let's talk to people. Let's not rely on polls and pundits. Let's really, really, you know, find those who are affected, find those who are voiceless and get out there. And now we're I'm trying to do it more and more. It's a lot of Zoom calls with people in Orlando and wearing masks when you travel to Polk County and, you know, just trying to find a way to do it.
Enthusiasm, DC, from the regular voters out there. Not that there's such a thing as a regular voter, but.
Well, you know, it's funny because we saw a really historically engaged electorate in 2018. There was considerable enthusiasm among Democrats who wanted to respond to Trump the only way they felt they could, which was at the ballot box. So we expected that again this year, not just on the Democratic side, though we thought there, you know, Trump's base was going to provide a counterbalance. But you know, in my conversations with voters, the coronavirus and President Trump's response to it has for many people hardened and intensified their opinions of the president one way or the other. So I sense the motivation is still there to vote and to be active in this election. I think all the political experts and inside people inside campaigns I talk to expect a very high turnout. I do, however, also sort of feel this fatigue and, you know, internalized conflict over how to proceed. You know, a lot of those sort of quote unquote swing voters in the middle, you know, don't necessarily think Trump has managed this crisis well, but they also don't necessarily support wholesale lockdowns and government making decisions about their businesses and when it can open and schools and even things like facial wear sort of cross the political spectrum from the middle to the left and right. And I hear a lot of people who say they don't want to vote for Trump, but they also are concerned over, you know, what's the best path forward out of this pandemic. And I don't know how that will manifest itself on November 3rd. It could be a thing where someone on October 31st is voting one way because something happened, and then by November 2nd, they're voting another way. And that's going to be a very small percentage of the population, but it's the population that's going to swing a state like Florida one way or the other.
No, so you were talking just now about, you know, the pandemic and people's response to it. It seems like even though the political year has been thrown off track, everything we've been covering has become political. Mm-hmm. Not just the pandemics, obviously, but the protests. So everything, does it just feel to you like everything that happens anywhere is political now? Is it just the way the world is?
Yeah, you know, I put together a newsletter for us every week that's quote unquote politics, but you know, it just touches so many subjects right now that I find myself pulling stories from across the newsroom from reporters who cover things that aren't always political. Education right now is extremely politicized. Healthcare obviously is very politicized. Public safety with the protests. It's every single reporter, I think, at our paper has written something that in the last 6 months I've included in our newsletter that is supposedly, you know, a politics newsletter. But that's also one of the things I really enjoy about our approach to covering politics, is we do try to make it very people focused and not gearing it towards insiders who might not be as interested in how the Polk County School Board is responding to school reopenings, but is very, very close to home. That's like the most close to home you can get for politics for many people.
Are you disappointed that you weren't able to cover the conventions? I mean, I imagine that for a political reporter, that's like covering the Super Bowl for a sports reporter, right? And you covered them remotely. Like, what was that like, and how did you shift to be able to do that in the last minute?
Yeah, you know, it's I have only been to one convention. It was the 2012 convention in Tampa, and I wasn't even working for the Tampa Bay Times at the time. So that was my first time here, and it was a really neat experience and certainly a lot going on. And one of the things that I was really excited about to do for, you know, what I love about working for like a regional newspaper like the Tampa Bay Times is that because we're not a national outlet, we can attend a national event like that, and we don't have to follow the crowd or the news cycle of the day. We can zig when 99% of everyone else out there is zagging. So that's what I missed, was this sort of opportunity to sort of put our own stamp on the event and find stories that not everyone else was covering. And you know, the way the campaigns and the parties were shifting what they were doing with the conventions to the very last minute. So we really had like no plan going into how we were going to cover it. And I think a lot of it was just let down to the wires. You know, we had some Florida folks who were speaking and having their moment in the spotlight. So we did some profiles of them. But really it was such a, it was something we sort of more just observed and absorbed more than really got a chance to report on. And I'm sort of wondering if that is a missed opportunity or if that was just the reality of how the situation was, because we didn't really get any sort of behind the scenes access. You know, these conventions, there's so much you see at night if you're tuning in as like a viewer that you think that's the convention, but in reality, there's so much going on during the day. There's junkets and celebrities who are meeting with the various delegations, and you know, there's fights over little minutiae in the platform, and there's protests outside, and you know, none of that can be captured in a two-hour Zoom call, which is what the convention's basically turned into.
Were you watching from your living room?
Yeah, I was just watching. I'm like, actually, we just canceled cable recently, which might have been a bad thing. We did the whole cord cutting thing, so I'm just streaming it from, you know, C-SPAN. And yeah, sitting there with my girlfriend and trying to, you know, I like having sort of another person. It was nice having another person there who's outside of politics to sort of watch and see what they react to, because you get in, you know, when you're at a convention, everyone is like a hyper political person. So with my girlfriend, who's, you know, she follows it, but she's not necessarily in the game, seeing how she reacts to speeches, that things that resonate with her that I wouldn't have realized would have been effective, was kind of an interesting way to sort of watch it this year.
Now, I seem to recall at a recent Teams meeting that girlfriend has become fiance. Is that right?
So, that is correct, yes.
Okay, all right. So
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's some upside to 2020, right?
Right.
So looking ahead to the debates, I mean, what's going through your mind in terms of, you know, how do you think anybody really, but certainly, you know, as we're approaching it, how do we make it? What do we do with that? What's your takeaway? What are you thinking about in terms of how to deliver some coverage besides the fact checking, which I'm sure will be part of everything, right?
Yeah, and I can't plug PolitiFact enough. I like I said, like you said, I work for them, and they just do such incredible work on, especially on debate nights, because you find the candidates actually repeat themselves a lot. So there's so much material that they've already fact checked, and they're just like ready to quick, you know, fact check the stuff in real time. So they do such a fantastic job. But, you know, for the primary debates, we developed this, you know, kind of methodology where we, as a team, watched, and if something stood out to one of us, we called them quote unquote moments. One of us would break off and write it really quickly, add context, report it out, link some stuff to PolitiFact if we knew it was out there, and then post it in part of this like live running story that we were constantly updating. And then, you know, once you finish that, then you return to the queue and you kept watching until it was your turn again. And that really worked for us. Our audience really liked it. And then we kind of went through and layered in some video afterwards and stuff. I think we'll probably do that again. I'd also like it to be a bit more nimble after the debates, where we can maybe go deeper on some of the issues that spring up, and, you know, especially if they have a Florida angle. You know, during the primary debates, they kind of got very repetitive on every single one, talked about climate change and the environment and the healthcare for all debate and how we're going to pay for it. It was like the same thing over and over again. It kind of lulled us into sleep. And I realized that we missed some opportunities to take some of the fresh debate, you know, Kamala Harris's busing critique of Biden. We had one of the biggest busing debates of all time in Florida over the Pinellas County school system and the desegregation and resegregation of the school system that created the quote unquote failure factories. We could have rehashed some of that reporting and brought that debate between Biden and Harris into a local context. So I'm going to try to see if I can find opportunities like that, and maybe, you know, rope in some of the reporters in the room newsroom who specialize in those areas. So something that, you know, we have that immediate thing for our viewers who are coming, our readers who are coming to our website during a debate to see, get that wrap up, but then add in that extra sort of heft to the post-debate coverage as well.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Previous things that the candidates have said, you've got it sort of at the ready so that you can respond quickly and provide some context. Yeah.
Yeah. If they just did these town halls, for example, where, you know, they said a lot of things. And I mean, Trump especially repeats himself over and over, because that's just how he is as a human. And Biden is such a practiced politician that he also doesn't veer off script very often, or he's been better about it in this election than in the past, where he's been known as sort of like his quote unquote gaffe prone candidate. So So yeah, so there's a lot of material that they've said in recent weeks that we're going to go back to, and hopefully that, you know, puts us in a place of being ready for whatever they have to say.
How much fact checking do you yourself have to do versus this team of people that have done a bunch in the past? And I know they're live during the debates and everything too. How much do you have to do on deadline or beforehand or?
It's really hard if you're not familiar with all the material, and having worked at PolitiFact, I really have this adverse is internal adversity to like, well, why should I, can I put this quote in my story when I haven't had the time to fact check it, but he also said it and we have to record this stuff for history. So that is sort of like the internal struggle. The one thing that is really useful about, especially like our platform for the web, is that you can layer in hyperlinks and say PolitiFact looked at this and gave it a false and linked to it. And so there is that sort of ability to be a little bit more, to add that little bit of context. But you know, it's just that the thing in real time where it's on a time crunch, you have to think, okay, is this so bombastic that we can't possibly put it in there without understanding the context and whether or not it's true? Or is this a political soundbite that is wishy-washy and clearly spin and just sort of the kind of things that candidates say? It's like this just constant balance that is really, really difficult to execute in real time. But yeah, that's the struggle.
That's a perfect segue to a question I wanted to ask you, because I grew up before there were PolitiFact thing. When I was your age, we didn't have that opportunity and we didn't have the hyperlink thing to do. And I did never wanted to cover politics because I thought everybody was always lying to me. Like, it just seems like it's so rife for being lied to in that beat. Like, what made you want to cover politics? I asked Maria, I said, is he a sadist?
Well, I didn't want to cover politics originally. I was a sports reporter in college. And you know, I was kind of a political junkie, and we were going through this really interesting time in politics where Obama was starting to run, and you know, we were coming out of the Bush wars and the 2004 election when I was in college. So I was a sports reporter. I thought that's what I was going to do, and then I ended up taking an investigative reporting class and realizing that going to baseball games for the rest of my life sounded like a lot of fun. But when I saw the potential of investigative reporting and accountability journalism to not just inform people, but change lives, that kind of made some of that other work feel a little bit more trivial. Not that I don't love reading great sports journalism still, but so then I kind of got accidentally put on a path to politics. When I was a senior in college, I had two job offers or internship offers, one with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel to work in their newsroom, and then the other was to be the Cubs.com beat reporter for the summer. And I chose the Journal Sentinel internship, which right before summer started, they had a bunch of layoffs and they had to cancel the program. So I ended up having no internship or job lined up after college, and put out 1,000 applications, and including for a grad school program at the University of Illinois Springfield that set you up with a 6-month internship covering politics in the state house. And it was such a cool environment because you can go on the floor of the House and the Senate and literally like pull senators and lawmakers off the floor and ask them questions. And I worked for a great reporter in the Chicago Sun-Times who really emphasized investigative and watchdog journalism. And being able to combine that sort of the investigative and accountability elements of journalism, especially having worked for PolitiFact. I mean, I was working in Washington for a little while and I just got so burnt out by the bubble and feeling like everyone was writing stories for their sources, which they are, because I was their readers in a lot of senses. And so I didn't want to write like that. I wanted to write, you know, for people. So moving to PolitiFact and being able to call a spade sort of reignited my fire for political journalism. And the Times has always done such like a really good job of not focusing on the day to day, but being able to sort of take a step back and add that sort of sweep and Florida focus and keep our readers in mind when we're covering politics instead of writing for insiders. So, just being in such a news rich state too, the stakes are so high here. It's a competitive press corps. It's a lot of fun day in and day out.
Let's talk about Florida. And if you're in a swing state this year, you know, you're probably doing the same thing we are, which is like this mix of excitement and dread. What do you enjoy about Florida politics?
It's that deciding role that the state plays, and you know, the entire country is watching us and reading us to understand what the heck is happening in this crazy, diverse 50-50 state, you know, where you have, even at home in our community, sometimes you drive 2 hours and you feel like you're just in a whole new state. And that sort of mashing that all together to come up with like a political equation that determines who's the president of the country is really neat. And then at home, you know, our community is relying on us to provide, you know, insights into the campaign and explain what the heck is going on outside Florida back to them. So it's just such a news rich state. You know, I have several friends who are freelance photographers, and there's like three or four of them operating just in the Tampa Bay area. And they are not at loss for work at all. I mean, they're constantly traveling. And it's just because, you know, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the AP, Reuters, they're constantly writing Florida stories because there's so much going on here. And all of it, you know, whether it's housing issues or climate change or, you know, the pandemic, it all links back to politics all the time. So I enjoy connecting those things together, and I enjoy doing that for our readers.
I want to ask you about the plan for election night, because I keep hearing from everybody, from my husband to my friends, like, oh, I can't wait till this is over. You know, I just can't wait till the election night and it's over. And I keep thinking, it's not going to be over. Like, I have a feeling that no matter what happens, there's going to be some kind of challenge or debate. And I moved here right when the Chad election was happening in 2000. So I remember how exhaustive that was to try to cover the aftermath of the undecided election. What are your all's plans or contingency plans for when that night, but also sort of afterwards?
We got a bit of a taste of that in 2018, because we had three races in Florida that went to recounts. And that really sort of christened me to Florida's crazy electoral nights. So I think we're very cognizant of that fact that this might not land on election night. I think our challenge is less, we're ready. I think we're going to stagger people. We're going to, you know, make sure everyone has enough caffeine. And we've also, the great thing is that we've hired an accountability reporter who is solely focused on covering sort of the mechanisms of voting and elections. Her name is Allison Ross. So she's just like extremely prepared for whatever craziness can come up that night. I think our biggest challenge is preparing our readers for there not to be a result on election night, and to not let someone like the president suggest that whatever the result looks like at 11 p.m. Eastern time on election night is the result, and any votes that are counted afterwards are some sort of attempt to steal an election. We have to explain to people that because of the pandemic, because this is going to be a very tight race, because of the postal system challenges and the emphasis on mail-in voting, that we might not know who won for several days, weeks, God forbid, months. I do think, though, if Florida, which is actually has a pretty strong mail-in voting background, and actually has a lot of infrastructure in place for a lot of people to vote by mail, if it's decided on election night, specifically if it's decided for Joe Biden, it will. Trump has very few paths to victory if he doesn't win Florida. Biden does. So if Biden wins Florida, then perhaps whatever happens in the rest of the country that isn't handling the election as well as we are won't matter as much, because Florida can sort of deliver that first round knockout. But if Florida is undecided, and the rest of the country is undecided, if Michigan and Wisconsin are having trouble counting their ballots, then yeah, I mean, we're expecting the unexpected. That's kind of just what we have to be.
Do you think people should mail in ballots? Do you trust that?
I think people should trust mail-in ballots, but they also should verify their mail-in ballot. And that means getting it in early and then watching it at every step to make sure it's actually counted. Because there are so many ways for your ballot to be not counted. It can be lost in the mail, which is not very common. It could be damaged in some way, or they can throw it out because your signature doesn't match. And so there are just a lot of opportunities for it to not count. So there are so many ways to check ahead of time to make sure it actually counts. And if it doesn't, or it gets thrown out, you can go on election day and fill out a provisional ballot.
So I was just going to say, I assume it's going to be a long night for Steve that election night. You'll if you're watching Twitter, I'm sure he'll be up all night long.
Right.
Thanks for joining us. If you have a question for Steve or for Lane, or you want to suggest a podcast topic, find us on our Facebook group or email it to writelane@tampabay.com. That's writelane@tampabay.com. Join us next week on Wednesday morning for the next podcast. This podcast was produced by Ayana Ishmael. Music was composed and performed by Dan DeGregory. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.